Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Erica.
Welcome to a special episode of Book Talk Podcast all about the Midnight Library. And if you're like, Erica, why do you sound like that? It's because I'm sick. So I'm just going to sound like this. And I'm so sorry.
I mean, I think it's okay. We'll all forgive you for being sick. Sound raspy.
Thanks, Katie.
You're welcome.
So we are going to talk about the Midnight Library and our thoughts and reactions to the themes of this book. But before we get started, Katie's going to give us a summary of what happened in this book.
FYI, spoilers will be included. Somewhere out beyond the edge of the universe, there is a library that contains an infinite number of books, each one telling the story of another reality. One tells you the story of your life as it is, along with another book for the other life you could have lived if you'd made a different choice at any point in your life. While we all wonder how our lives might have been, what if you had the chance to go to the library and see for yourself? Would any of these other lives truly be better? In Midnight Library, Nora Seed finds herself faced with this exact decision, faced with the possibility of changing her life for a new one, following a different career, undoing old breakups, realizing her dreams of becoming a glaciologist. She must search within herself as she travels to the Midnight Library to decide what is truly fulfilling in life and what makes it worth living in the first place.
We should also say this book deals with themes of self-harm and suicide, so take care when listening to this episode.
I think we can probably start right there because the first time that I picked up this book, I was like not in a great headspace moment. And I read the first four pages and I was like, not for me, not today. I was like, this is not going to work. But I picked it up again 6 months later in kind of a different phase, a different life, if you will. And I feel like it resonated a lot more with me. The book opens up with Nora feeling, you're getting like an inside picture of her depression and of her struggling with and then eventually attempting to commit suicide. What did you think of how those mental health struggles for Nora were displayed in the book?
I'll start with the good, which is I think Matt wanted to write a book that straightforwardly reasons why your current life is not so bad and can be made better. And there are alternatives to ending it. And that's a good message. It's straightforward. It comes through. I think this is a self-helpy book a la like The Alchemist or The Four Agreements, where there's a very clear message throughout the book that he's not really trying to be subtle about. It's like, you might think that if you had just done everything differently, your life would be better, but actually your life would be incomplete and it would be imperfect in other ways that you can't really anticipate. And in some ways, the current life that you're living has all of the same opportunities for joy and also loss and pain, but also fulfillment and meaning. And that there's so much that sort of you can't see. So I feel like he's very straightforwardly trying to write a book about how people who deal with depression and suicide potentially don't recognize that like there's not some greener pasture or some better way that things could be. That being said, I think the majority of the critiques I've seen about this book are that he doesn't portray depression in a way that resonates with everyone. I am not someone who struggles with depression. I'm much more on the anxiety side. So some of it I don't relate to at all, but I also can't really critique because I don't understand what that would feel like. It does seem like she spirals really quickly from like a really, really bad day. And I think we have, you know, suicide at the top of our minds lately because of Twitch, who just committed suicide, who sort of on the outside seemed so perfect, but maybe had one of those days where like everything kept getting worse and worse. Again, I don't know. I'm not the right person to say whether that's realistic or not, or whether that's really representative of the full scope of depression that people suffer with. It doesn't seem like it is from how other people reacted to it.
As someone who does not struggle with depression, I can't comment on if it was accurate or not. But I do have some people who are close to me and who have been through my life who have committed suicide. And I think that two things I would say about it, it's a very personal thing and how people struggle with it and how they kind of move through it and when it gets bad enough. I also think like working on the suicide hotline for years, it sometimes can be like a light and mild depression, and then a really bad day can be the difference between making that decision and not making that decision. And I think it's very easy to do the kind of positivity outlook, which is like to recognize that life, that things could be worse, or that your life, every life has opportunities for joy and for heartbreak and for this like profound loss. But I think when you're truly in the depths of a mental health crisis, like somebody telling you to recognize that crisis is like not always, it's not going to work, I think, in my experience. And I think the bad day theme is the fact that that's when like this person commits suicide, I think is probably relatable to some people just from like my experience and what I've seen. I was talking to a friend whose dad committed suicide the other day, and she was saying, I think that it wasn't all of these things that you can identify, these outward causes that caused somebody to make this decision. It was depression. It was kind of this split second decision, but it can happen so quickly, right? It's like a moment's decision. And so I think you kind of get that feeling with Nora. You're like, well, it wasn't that bad of a day. It's not like this. I mean, it was a bad day, but it's not like, you know, it's hard to kind of explain it. But I think the thing is, it's not based in logic and it can't be fixed with a positive outlook. And so I think that is kind of portrayed, but I get the critiques of it, the positives and negatives of the book. I think when I read it at the phase of my life, when I read it and with my brain, which does not struggle with depression, I feel like it came off uplifting and optimistic to me that like, we don't know if the version of the life that we're currently living is the best one. Could it be better? Could it be worse? We're only living the one we can now. And that's the one we have to focus on. So I think that's important also. The last thing I want to say about it, sorry, is I think back to the mindset part of it. Like, I think if you're feeling like you are in this place, I don't know if it would be better or worse to read it, because I think it does leave you optimistic, and sometimes it's easier to consume this like lighter literature about harder things when you're maybe struggling with a lot of deeper things internally. But I don't know.
I like that he took the topic seriously. It's definitely a book that looks straight at suicidal ideation and this idea that maybe I've made so many wrong choices that there is no way to get out of it. Like, I have nothing. She's totally untethered at the end of this bad day. Nobody needs her anymore. She got fired from teaching piano lessons. She's estranged with her brother. You know, her cat doesn't even need her anymore because the cat passed because she's a bad cat mom. And she just feels like there's no point anymore. I've made every single wrong choice there is to make. And now, you know, there's only one logical conclusion. And I think he takes that seriously enough and then gives Nora, the character, the option to, okay, so which choice was the worst? Go back and fix it. So in the Midnight Library, she's able to look at her book of regrets, pick a regret, and then find the book where she makes a different choice. And that allows her to sort of interrogate this idea that, oh, it was just like a series of bad choices. If only I had been a glaciologist, or however you say that, if only I had not quit the band, then I would really be happy. Then I would be the version of myself that feels more fulfilled. And in almost every life, she still finds it lacking or challenging in other ways she didn't anticipate, or other people were affected by those choices in ways she couldn't have anticipated. And that is like, I think it's a very serious way to look at that question that we all have, which is, could it have all been different? Would I be totally different if I had made one little decision? And essentially the book is saying your whole life might be different, but you're pretty much the same person.
I think that was my favorite part of this book. I feel like when I tell people about it, like the message that it drove home for me was like, you get to make the decision, but you do not get to pick the outcome. And I think all the time in work and in my life, I'm like, you're making the best decision that you possibly can with the information that you have, which is like a key in leadership, right? Or whenever you're doing anything, like you could come back 4 weeks later and have different information and be like, well, I would have made a different decision had I known, had I been the person that I am today. When I made that decision, maybe I wouldn't have made it. And I think it kind of takes the pressure off the individual making decisions, because while they are important, you still have life, right? You're still a person who has like the joy and the heartbreak, and these little decisions are not like the make it or break it. There's so much in all of our lives. I think it takes the pressure off of these kind of individual decisions that you're making, because you're doing the best that you can, which I thought was like an uplifting message of it.
I am also not someone who really connects with feelings of regret. I feel like what you're saying that, you know, I've made a lot of decisions that maybe I wish I would have made a different decision. But I feel like at the time, knowing what I knew, I was at least intentional. And I feel like that's all you can really do is be intentional with the decisions that you're making and recognize that, like, am I going to regret this decision? Probably. Am I going to regret it if I make this other decision? Probably. Like, you know, you only have a certain set of information, and all you can do is make the best decision that you, with the information you have at the time, and then, like, let it play out. And that's the great challenge of life, is like, you only get to see how one path plays out. And so then again, this book is taking an idea of, like, what if you could see all of the other paths? How would that change? And which path would you ideally choose?
Correct. I think that you are a person who is very, very good at being intentional, at being in touch with your feelings, and of, like, giving yourself grace or being gentle with yourself, knowing that you were in your mind being as intentional and as thoughtful and as feeling all the things that you could, and you made that decision. I think that's the goal. I think that's what we're all trying to, like, get to. You are already really good at that, which is a compliment.
Aw, thanks. I just watched this documentary on Netflix called Stutz, and I highly recommend it. It's Jonah Hill making a documentary about his therapist. And one thing that they talk about, which I really resonate with, is this idea of, like, life force. And, like, all you can do, I think of it as more of, like, momentum. And sometimes I think about it as, like, inevitability. Like, this is just going to happen. I'm just, like, creating enough momentum in one direction that, like, and, like, that's all I can focus on, essentially. I can't commit myself to these outcomes. I can't predict what's going to happen when I make these choices. All I can do is work on my life force of, like, the momentum to get the life I want to lead, to be the type of person I want to be, and to just, like, sustain a forward sense of progress. And then, like, where that goes, I don't have to be attached to necessarily.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. As somebody who's only felt feelings for, like, the last year of my life, I'm just like, this is amazing. What a great goal. I feel like we should all be doing that. Oh, man. On a lighter note, I just want to say I loved the kind of storytelling setup of this actual library. Like, I just could envision it so well, and I wanted to be in there seeing these, like, infinite shelves and Mrs. Elm being there to greet you with her, like, cozy little desk light when you walked in, and all of these books in the shelves spinning. I feel like the imagery of this actual fictitious, like, mind version of this library was beautiful. It reminded me a little bit of, like, a T.J. Klune book, where there's a lot of scene setting and this kind of magical realism part, which I enjoy when reading books.
It also reminded me a little bit of Piranesi, where you're in this mystical in-between space and you're sort of trying to figure out where you are and what it means and what's going on and what are the parameters. I think she also keeps asking those questions, like, is this hell? Is this purgatory? Am I dead? And it's just like, no, you're just in the Midnight Library. You're just in this very vague, kind of ambiguous state. I should also clarify, I didn't really like this book. I feel like it was fine.
Oh.
Yeah, we've been talking very positively about it. I feel like it was just so incredibly predictable. Like, of course, spoiler, of course, in the end, she's just going to go back to her regular life and make better choices and feel like, oh, if I just, like, put myself out there, maybe things would be better and I can just call people and I can reconnect. And, like, yeah, of course. That was just, like, I was like, I see this coming from, like, the first page, that, like, clearly his point is not that, like, you should try and commit suicide and then put yourself into another version of your life where you made a better choice. There's just no way that's going to happen. And there's no, like, tension or like, I just felt like it was so straightforward from A to B. I just knew immediately where it was going.
I think for me, yes, it was not a book where the tension is pulling you through it, but I think it was, like, it is the self-helpy book. If that's, like, the kind of state of mind you're in, where you can be like, how is this person working through these kind of big life questions? I think this is kind of like calling a friend when you are having a rough day. You're like, okay, I didn't get this job offer that I wanted or whatever it is. And your friend tells you all the things that you already know, right? They're like, you are smart. You can do this. Like, that's kind of like what the book feels like for me, which is a different reason, I think, for reading than having a tension that pulls you through. But that's kind of what I'm thinking when I read a book like this. Like, these are things I know. This is a predictable book. I know what's going to happen, but it's like calling an old friend that reminds you of what you know and reminds you that, like, of maybe something you had kind of forgotten. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a nice way to phrase it. One thing about the structure of this book is it is taking this plot idea of multiverses or many different simulations or runs of your life. And that is sort of a common sci-fi, magical realism, fantasy style book. What did you think about that? How many lives she led? Which lives did you like the best? How did you feel about that structure?
I loved it. I feel like it felt escapist. So it was kind of like reading a bunch of little novels where you get, and I think he's really good at the scene setting. So I feel like wherever we went, it was like very easy and like atmospheric to be in that place. I was like, I feel like I am with her studying glaciers. I am with her in this beautiful penthouse apartment with the guy that she loved. Like I'm in whatever life she's envisioning. So I liked the multiverse. I think I loved the ones most where she meets the guy who's also able to do it, who's also able to kind of try the different lives. I thought that was really interesting. I also think that I liked the lives best where she gets to do something that for most of us is not possible. So I think there's a lot of ways you can make different decisions and change what your life outcome would be. But some people just like don't have the ability to be a famous musician or be an Olympic person or whatever it is. Like some people just like physically that's not going to be a thing, even if you made all different decisions. So I enjoyed those like a little bit more fantastical lives she went through. What did you think of the switching back and forth?
I do want to talk more about the other slider in a minute, but I like that there's many versions of Nora. I feel like that's very relatable. We tend to experience characters who are sort of have like their one life passion and that's it. And I feel like Nora is much more like all of us, where it's like you can't really sum up all your interests in one bucket. She had swimming, she had music, she had philosophy, she's got all of these different, the glaciologist, like she's got all these different versions of herself within the same person. And that I really liked about her as a character. The parts where she was in these lives and having to sort of like make it up as she goes along was so stressful. Oh my God. The idea of just like you have no memory of these people, where you are, what the expertise you're supposed to have, what you're supposed to be doing, and she has to just sort of like fake it and figure it out as she goes along. That really was a lot.
How do you think you would have handled that if you were placed in one of those
terribly
lives?
I would have handled it terribly. I feel like she did a pretty good job. After a while, she kind of got used to it. I think my favorite of the lives that she went back to is to actually learn that Dan was kind of a piece of shit. I feel like this is a funny thing that you do when you go through a breakup, is to like look back and be like, oh, it wasn't so bad. We were really happy. Like, I wish we could have stayed together and maybe that would have been the ideal relationship. And then she's like, wait, this guy sucks.
I do think that's like a theme across people's lives, like romanticizing your past, not necessarily your relationships, but whatever decision you didn't make, even again, that's like a trusting your gut thing, like making this decision and then looking back and being like, did I just not see it? And romanticizing the past, like looking at it through rose-colored glasses and looking at our own current situations much more critically. It's what an annoying thing that I feel like people do all the time.
I did think, though, that there would be more of a twist when she went into these different lives. I feel like all of the lives were pretty straightforward. I think with the exception of like the one life where her brother had died, that was obviously sad. But it was kind of like, okay, fine. But the other slider I thought was super interesting, and I wish he had leaned into that more, of the idea that like there are many people who are having this experience at the same time, and how they find each other and what that means. I thought that was fascinating. And also the idea that this other slider that she meets and is like romantically entangled with, that he's like addicted to always trying new lives and to never basically settling on one. He's just taking this as an opportunity to be very creative and explore this multiverse instead of trying to find the life, which I think she really wants, to find the life that she's meant to be in.
I did love that his motivations were like in direct contradiction to hers, because people have different reasons for doing different things. And I loved his idea of like, I'm just going to see how many fun lives I can go into and who I could have possibly been. But that's just, honestly, I side with Nora on this. That sounds exhausting. Like, at some point I need to like pick a life and just be like, this is it. Otherwise, I don't think you get to be fully invested in like the heartbreaks, but also in the joys and all the things. If you're not, I don't know, at some point she ends up back in the Midnight Library each time. Speaking of that, I think that every time things get hard, I can't remember exactly what puts her back in the library. Do you remember what it is? You just read the book recently.
It's like as soon as she starts to feel like unhappy with that current life.
Okay. Correct. So after each time she starts to feel semi-unhappy with her current life, she gets to go back to the Midnight Library and kind of start the process again. What did you think about that? The fact that she gets to kind of see the end results without seeing how she got there and then being able to transport out of it the second it's not what she expected.
I mean, you need a way of going between the lives. I think I'm confused about like the world that she's living in. Like, what is this library? Who controls it? Why is it like catching on fire at a certain point? How long does it last? It's very vague and confusing.
I felt like it catches on fire when she's maybe slipping out of like maybe actually going to die. Or needs to like make a decision.
Yeah.
And the time for me is like when she's in my head, I was thinking like she had attempted to commit suicide and then she was like, not yet. Like she could go back to her life. She may not have been successful in the attempt. And she was like, getting in that between my head. She's like in the hospital at this point or something, like in a coma. And so I think as she's like weakening and getting worse, that's when I see like it on fire. Like you got to make a decision soon. You don't get to do this forever. Which I think maybe makes her life and situation different than the other slider, because I feel like her time is running out where his is apparently not, or he has longer time. So I don't know if this has anything to do with how they're in their original life, how they're existing, or if they're existing.
Right. But what does that mean?
Listen, I don't know. I feel like that's the whole point of this book.
It's not a clear world. It's not like clear what the rules are, how this is happening, how long this is happening for, who is in control. Like if this is all about her and like her physical body, how long it has left, is this all just like a hallucination that she's having right before she comes back to consciousness? Is this a real world? Is this a world controlled by some higher being? It's just like, it just is. Just don't worry about it. It just is.
Right. Fair. I think that's the point of magical realism books. Like you don't know, you don't understand. You're trying to figure it out, which is one of the central tensions like pulling you through. Cause you're like, when will it end? And will she be okay? And does she actually get to make the choice? And so I think while you know how it's going to end, that kind of not understanding the world might be what compels you to keep reading it.
I don't think so. I disagree, but right,
disagree. Okay. You don't have to agree. I was just another point of it. Like, I agree that it's frustrating to not understand how the world works, but I think that's like the mystery of it. Like, I don't know.
I kind of thought the library was going to be more of a real library. I think other people have mentioned this too, that because it's called the Midnight Library and we're all readers and we love reading, like there was some indication or thought, at least that I had, that this was going to be more literary. Like maybe she was going to live lives of famous authors or something like that. But no, it's just like the library is just like a literary device. And we even learned from the other slipper that like other people don't have a library. They have a video rental store or whatever.
I've heard this critique before about this book and kind of about the Woman in the Library book that we read also, where they're both like, this is a book for people who love books. And you're like, the only book thing is that there are books. What is happening?
The one life that Nora almost stays in is a life where she marries the doctor and they have a daughter. And she's really, really happy. She stays for a while in that life. But ultimately, she decides that life is not perfect because she sort of missed these key moments of like getting to this point. getting to where her daughter is like 5 or 6. And so she doesn't remember, you know, her and this doctor falling in love or giving birth or all of these things. And I like that part because I do think that's also part of what Matt is saying, is that like it's not necessarily about the end. It's not about this resolution or where you end up. It's about the process of getting there. And that's sort of what life is all about. It's about these choices and going through the process to get to where you want to be. I liked that.
I love that too. I think it's easy to imagine that it's easy to hope to just end up at this successful station when you've done it correctly and you have, you know, she's married to a doctor and she has the daughter and she has the house, but the good and the bad and the ugly that got you there, I think, is how you appreciate and love that life even more. So I like that part too. I want to read one quote by Matt, or one quote in this book from the Midnight Library. I think that it is a little self-helpy and sweet, so I figure we might as well just end on a self-helpy and sweet moment from this book. So it is easy to mourn the lives we aren't living, easy to wish we'd developed other talents, said yes to other offers, easy to wish we'd worked harder, loved better, handled our finances more astutely, been more popular, stayed in the band, gone to Australia, said yes to the coffee, or done more yoga. It takes no effort to miss the friends we didn't make and the work we didn't do, the people we didn't marry and the children we didn't have. It's not difficult to see yourself through the lens of other people and to wish you were all the different kaleidoscope versions of you that they wanted you to be. It is easy to regret and keep regretting until our time runs out. But it is not lives we regret not living that are the real problem. It is the regret itself. What we consider to be the most successful route for us to take actually isn't, because too often our view of success is about some external bullshit idea of achievement, an Olympic medal, the ideal husband, and a good salary. We have all these metrics we try and reach, when really success is not something you measure and life is not a race you can win.
I think that's it. That's the whole little what you're supposed to get out of this book,
for better or for worse.
Talk. I am like 80% of the way through When We Were Bright and Beautiful. I think I just got to like one of the big twists, and I can't wait to talk to you about it when it's done. But that's all. I'm sick. I haven't been commuting. I haven't been reading. I've just been wallowing, watching Too Hot to Handle, and taking naps.
Your choices in reality TV are one of my favorite things about you. It's just like absurd. Like this literary minded person who's like, this wasn't deep enough or dark enough for me. I didn't learn anything about my inner higher self, is like, Too Hot to Handle. I've seen every episode.
Look, when I'm
Love
sick,
is Blind,
I, just like,
I could tell you who they are.
I just need to like black out and come to, you know, so I just need some levity in my crappy TV.
I mean, I get it. You read a lot of really deep books, so you need to balance it. I just think it's hilarious. I mean, we're coming to the holidays. I'm not reading anything either. This is the phase where I'm either reading like really easy to read books or I'm reading nothing. I am currently reading The Heart Principle by Helen Hoang. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that name wrong. It's currently a rom-com, I think it's going to be. Although, as we discussed last week, I don't know how you define a rom-com, but I think the central tension is romance. So there's that. And then I have an ambitious list for what I want to finish by the end of the year, because this is also when I'm like, what can I get done? I want to read The Hospital, which is a nonfiction kind of documentary type book about healthcare systems in Bryan, Ohio, where my family is from. But it's like a best-selling book about like the state of healthcare in America. It's a little bit dry, but I feel like that's one I want to like actually read right now while I've already met my reading goal and have a minute. And then my friend Jesse gave me this book called Light Lark, that he was like, I read this in a day. It's like, I think it's like a YA sci-fi book. I'm not sure. But then he was like, I gave it to my friends and they loved it too. I'm like, all right, I could read that. And then I have to read another Taylor Jenkins read. So I'm going to read Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Why do you have to read it? You just want to?
I want to. And also everybody keeps telling me to read it. And I loved Carrie Soto's back. So I'm like, okay, I'll probably love Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. So it's worth a shot. I did go to Book Loft today and I bought Carrie Soto is Back and House in the Cerulean Sea, two books that I loved and did not own so that I could own them. And I bought a $7 on sale book about a bookstore in Scotland, because always.
That sounds nice. I saw the other day someone left the power outside, so I snatched it.
Oh, such a good book. Someone asked me the other day, like, what my favorite book is, which I hate that question. I hate people asking what my favorite movie is or my favorite book. Like, it really gives me anxiety because I don't have one, but I have an all-time Rex list that I give people. I was like, oh, do you want to read my phone? Here are my top 15. Just, like, so obnoxious. When people ask you that, do you have a favorite book?
My favorite book is 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami. Maybe. I don't know. It's definitely a Murakami book. It's either 1Q84 or one of his other books. But someone asked me what my favorite book of 2022 was, and I literally blanked, and I was like, I couldn't tell you any books I read. I've never heard of a book immediately. I have nothing to say at all.
That's how I feel when people ask me. I'm like, I've never read a book. I don't read books. What could you possibly mean? I don't have a favorite. They're like, what movies do you like? I'm like, I've never seen a movie. What's your favorite color? I don't know. What are they? Like, I just get so stressed. Can we like them all?
Ugh. We will make some sort of best of 2022 list at some point, because I do want to think about our favorite books that we read. But not right now. Right now it's too stressful.
Yeah, I think we do it in the new year. We'll be like, what were our favorite books of 2022? I mean, there are still 10 days left. You could read your next favorite book.
That's true. I think it might be School for Good Mothers, to be honest.
Really?
That was a good book.
I mean,
it could have been Vladimir. It could have been Vladimir if it kind of wrapped up a little bit better.
Oh, Vladimir had such potential. Did you read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow?
Yes, I'm the one who told you to read it.
Yeah, well, we weren't the only ones. So I forgot, but I loved that book. Okay, I did love School for Good Mothers. I loved, oh my gosh, so many. Remarkably Bright Creatures. Did you read that yet? I loved that book. Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. It's also The Power I read in 2022. I feel like when I go, A Woman Is No Man. Oh, so good. When I go back to my list, I'm like, I loved all these for different reasons and for different things. But I will work on my top five.
Okay, well, next week we're going to start reading Our Wives Under the Sea. So check our Instagram page and the show notes for the schedule.
Can't wait. See y'all next
week. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Safe travels.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week.